Thank you so much, Rabbi Glasser. Thank you all for coming, and Bereshus, Rabbi Baum Shlita. It's so wonderful to be with you this morning and to share some Divrei Torah as we head into the Yom Noraim. I would just like to acknowledge the sponsors of this morning's shir, Sharon and Rabbi Richard Alman, in memory of their beloved son, Rabbi Shmuel Elio Alman, whose yard site is on Chaf Vav Elul, His Holy Neshama should have an aliyah, and we thank the Alman so very much for the sponsorship. This morning, I didn't realize, the truth is, when I accepted to speak in Teaneck at 9:30 in the morning, that it was the morning after the first night of Slichos. At the time, I didn't realize that. My shul had actually canceled our early Shachris minion, and then I quickly recruited yesterday to get a minion together. But Baruch Hashem, we made it. And it is appropriate, though, that we get together right after the first night of Slichos, because that first night of Slichos, when we hear those words, B'motzai Menucha, we begin to realize that we're very close. We begin to realize just how close we are to the Yom Noraim and how prepared we need to be. And one of the most famous slichos that we say over the next couple of weeks is the slicha that we incorporate into the Musaf of Yom HaKippurim, and that is the slicha of the Asara Harugei Malchus. You know, we often think of it as a kina, because it's that too. There is a separate kina for the Asara Harugei Malchus. That is, of course, on Tisha B'Av, but we speak about these 10 martyrs on Yom HaKippurim, and I want to talk a little bit about its relationship to Yom HaKippurim, and what exactly the lessons of the story are, particularly the way the story is quoted in a number of different midrashim. First of all, just as far as why it is that we discuss the Asara Harugei Malchus at all on Yom HaKippurim, what does that have to do? It makes a lot of sense on Tisha B'Av. On Tisha B'Av, we discuss all Jewish tragedies. Yom Kippur is a happy day. Yom Kippur is an uplifting day. Yom Kippur is a day of Kapara and Tahara and Kedusha. It is not a day of Avelus. It breaks Avelus. So how is it that we find it appropriate to discuss about Asara Harugei Malchus on Yom HaKippurim? And I figure it's an appropriate way to start when we're at a yeshiva university program with the words of Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal. Rav Soloveitchik, in his essay in the book "The Lord is Righteous in All of His Ways," writes as follows: that you have to understand a little bit about the context of the Asara Harugei Malchus, and he tells us that the main topic of the kinos in the first half of the kinos on Tisha B'Av was Chorban Yerushalayim, Chorban Beis HaMikdash, and then it shifts into the martyrdom of Torah scholars, of whose communities, the deaths of many, many righteous ones and the communities that they lived in. And he says that the Asara Harugei Malchus represent a Chorban of sorts, which, as we pointed out, makes a lot of sense. But he says a little bit about the context. Rome's policy, he said, the Roman governors in Jerusalem received strict orders not to interfere with the rituals in the Beis HaMikdash while it was still standing. And then suddenly, after Beitar, about 60 to 65 years after the Churban, Rome's policy completely changed. Rome suddenly became one of the worst religious persecutors in Jewish history, because apparently Rome realized that it had made a mistake. They had thought that once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, they'd have no problem with the Jewish people as a separate entity. They assumed that the Jewish people would be assimilated into the general society once the general society was open to them, and they had no Beis HaMikdash to attach themselves to. All they had to do, thought Rome, was to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. They assumed that it would not be necessary to touch Jewish observances. That would fall away on its own. But Rome realized later that even though they had destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, they had not destroyed the Jewish community. The Jewish community was as loyal to God after the Churban as it was during the time the Beis HaMikdash was standing. Rome realized that the strength of the Jew is not dependent upon the Beis HaMikdash, that Torah is the cohesive force that unites the Jews and helps them carry on even under the worst of circumstances. The observances of Jewish law is what unites them. It's halacha that unites the Jewish people. And it was at this point that a wave of persecution in the form of restrictive decrees inundated the Jewish community, and the first of the Asara Haruge Malchus was killed. And Rav Soloveitchik goes on to explain that we read about this story twice a year in Kinos on Tisha B'Av, and then again, as we've mentioned, on Yom HaKippurim as well. And he says, but the formulation, the length of the presentations, the emphasis of the presentations is different in the two contexts. He says, if you study the piyut of Eila Ezkara for Yom Kippur and you compare it to Arze HaLevanon, you see that the piyut for Yom Kippur was written as a slicha, like Selach Lanu Avinu, whereas the piyut on Tisha B'Av was written as a kina, different styles, different vocabularies, and also different purposes and objectives. On Yom HaKippurim, and this is the point I wanted to draw out, we recite the story of the 10 martyrs, says Rav Soloveitchik, because Chazal tell us that the death of the righteous serves as atonement like their karbanos. It's a Gemara in Meseches Moed Katan Dav Chavches that the Misas Tzadikim is mechaperes like a para aduma. The death of the righteous is a sacrifice, it's a karban. Yom Kippur is the day of kapara. So we read the story about Asara Ruge Malchus as Bitoras Kapara. It's an act of atonement. Unishalma Parim Svasenu. We don't offer the Karbanos, so they are the Karbanos. And we speak about the Avoda performed by the Kohen Gadol Yom Kippur, and then right after that, we offer our Karban. And our Karban are the Misas Tzadikim that serves as Kapara. And over here, it's not just one karban, but we read about 10 karbanos. But it's really more than 10 karbanos. These 10 symbolize or represent the hundreds of karbanos, the thousands of karbanos that Klal Yisrael have. And Rav Soloveitchik points out that in Yom Kippur, we highlight three things. First of all, the Misas Tzadikim is the greatest sacrifice. It's based on Menachos Taf Kuf Yud that Michal Sar HaGadol was Omer Umakrivel of Karban, and Tosel says that the Karban referred to is Nishmosein Shel Tzadikim, the ultimate Karban, and that's why it's part of the Seder Avoda. And second, he says, Yom Kippur is a day of Kapara for the deceased as well. It's not only a day of Kapara for the living. And that's why we say Yizkar in Yom HaKippurim, because we have to recall, not just to recall our forefathers, but they also need Kapara on Yom Kippur. And third, we describe the entire story in great detail to emphasize that it was a voluntary karban. Kiblu aleichem yedidim. They accepted their fate. They had a few days, as the story is told to us, to make a decision. Should we? Shouldn't we? And they chose to. They chose to give themselves up to submit to the inscrutable will of the Ribono Shel Olam. So that's the context. That's what Asara Ruge Malchus is about on Yom Kippur. But the story is recorded not only in the Slicha that we read on Yom Kippur, it's recorded in a variety of Midrashim as well. Let me read you one such Midrash and maybe point out some flaws or problems in the story, and then maybe we'll develop a Mahalich in terms of how to deal with these problems in the story. The story is recorded in Otzer Midrashim on Asara Ruge Malchus. It tells us as follows. Achar Churban Abayis hayu pritzei hador misga'im. The Medrash starts out that after the Churban Abayis, the pritzei hador, the people who were, my daughter just asked me, after one of my sons made a comment to her, my daughter said, what's pritzus? I said, it's the opposite of tznius. So the pritzei, I don't want to know what the conversation was that preceded that, but she was not, she didn't know, she never heard it, she's 12. So, but the pritzei hador, the people who were the opposite of tznuim, they were misga'im. They were misga'im. They felt a sense of pride. Pride? The Beis HaMikdash was just destroyed. They should have been completely humbled. But they felt a sense of pride, of arrogance. Va'amru, and they said, Mahiv savnu bazesh anechra v'abayis. What did we lose already when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? Hari yesh beinenu talmidei chachamim. We still have great talmidei chachamim. Shemadrichim esolam b'taraso u'b'mitzvosav. We have the ability to observe Torah and mitzvos. We have talmidei chachamim. Miyad nasana Kodesh Baruch Hu b'leif ha-kesa shel Romi lilmot Torah Moshe mipi chachamim u'zakenim. Hashem planted the idea in the mind of the Kesar to learn Torah Moshe, to learn the Torah from chachamim and zakenim. V'hischil b'sefer Bereishis. V'yolomid ad shehigia leve'ela mishpatim. He started with sefer Bereishis and he learned through Parshas Mishpatim. He didn't get up to Vayikra, he would have quit. V'kivin shehigiyah l'pasuk, v'gonei v'ishu m'charo. And once he got to the pasuk of gonei v'ishu m'charo, about kidnapping, mi'ad siva l'malos paltero min'na'alim. He asked that they fill his palace with shoes. Go shoe shopping. Buy all the shoes that you can find. Fill the palace with shoes. V'shalach likro la'asara chachmei Yisrael, and he called 10 chachmei Yisrael, u'balu v'anav o'shivan b'katadro shalzav. He sat them on golden stools. Amar lehem, omek adin yeshi lishol michem, v'al tor melikim adin v'sa emes v'amishpat. I have a question in din to ask you, and tell me the truth. Be honest with me what the real answer is. Don't get political with me. Don't start trying to finesse the situation as we often do when we're asked the direct question. I want you to tell me the straight answer. What does the Torah say? So Amar lo emor. They said, okay, that's what we do. We're rabbis. Tell us what your question is. Amar lehem, umi shegana vishmeach av bnei Yisrael v'samar bo machra madino. If you kidnap somebody and you sell him, what's the halacha? Omru lo, HaTorah omra mosimas. You want to know what the Torah says? The Torah says mosimas, that such a person has to be put to death. Omru lehem, imkein atem chayavim isa. It's amazing. He used the trick of Nasan Hanavi. Nasan Hanavi has to give David HaMelech Musar, but he can't give. How do you give David HaMelech Musar? We all have deep inside of our souls this team of high-priced attorneys that are able to defend us with arguments that we never would otherwise dream of until we feel threatened. So what does Nasan Hanavi do? He tells a story: a rich man, a poor man, one little sheep, and a whole bunch of flocks of sheep, and the rich man takes the poor. What do you say, David? Ben Mavesu, such a person needs to die. And of course, Nelson turns to David, Ata ish, oh, you're that guy. Uh-oh, I just paskened on myself. And that's what the Kesar did. And of course, the story goes on. Not going to read the whole story inside, but he tells them, you have to represent the 10 brothers of Yosef who were involved in the Mechira. And therefore, you have to pay the price. And they take a few days, they have to ask the Ribbono Shel Olam if this is really their fate, and in fact, it is their fate, and so on. A number of questions emerge from the story. First of all, it emphasizes that he filled the place with shoes. Why did he fill the place with shoes? If you look in the story of Yosef, the Chumash doesn't tell us much anything about shoes, really, when they sold Yosef. The Navi and Amos sort of fills it in. The Chumash tells us that they sold Yosef for Esrim Kesef, 20 silver coins. It seems like a totally unnecessary detail. You know, when talking about buying the Ma'aris HaMachpelah, so I understand why the Chumash emphasizes the cost, the price of Ma'aris HaMachpelah. Because, look, Ephron was selling this useless cave for him, and he charged so much money for it. And for Avram Avinu, he was willing to pay that amount of money, even though it was not fertile land, it was not something that Ephron had anything else to do with. And he was willing to pay that amount of money to bury Sarah. He was willing to pay that amount of money to find a proper makom kvura for Sarah. I get it. Over there, it makes sense. It's actually a beautiful vart. One of my friends once told me, it's good to keep in your back pocket if you're ever asked to speak at a Shavuot Brach, it's like on the spot. You know, the idea of Kiddushin is derived of Kesef Kiddushin, that we could be Mekadesh and Isha the way we are with Shava Kesef, with the ring, Kicha Kicha Mistei Ephron, that we derive it from the purchase of the Ma'aris HaMachpelah. So one of my chaverim, Rabbi Yecheskel Freundlich from Montreal, once said many, many years ago, I think he's the one that I heard it from, said many years ago that the idea of Kicha Kicha Mistei Ephron, why would we learn Kiddushin from Stei Ephron? He said that if you think about the mentality of Avram Avinu and the mentality of Ephron as that deal was going on, what was going through Avram Avinu's head? He must have been thinking, I'm about to buy Ma'aris HaMachpelah. This is going to be a place for centuries and for millennia that Jewish people are going to be able to come and daven. It's going to be a place of such intense kedusha. It's going to be a makom kvura for the avos and imahos. Wow, and all I have to pay is 400 silver coins? That's the deal of the century. What did they buy Manhattan for? I forget. That's going to be something they're going to talk about for years. That's an amazing deal. For what I'm offering, just 400 silver coins, I get Ma'aris HaMachpelah? And what was Ephron thinking? Ephron must have been thinking, wow, what a great deal I'm getting over here. I have this useless cave. It's totally infertile land. They can't do anything with it anyway. This guy's willing to give me 400 silver coins for it. For what I have to offer, I just got the greatest deal in the world. So when a couple gets married, each one should be thinking to themselves, wow, for what I am, for who I am, what I have to offer, I'm really marrying up. I really did well over here. I got a great deal. Kicha, kicha, mistei Ephraim. Okay, over there I understand. It's just an aside. If you need to speak at a Shavuot Brachos, I may have to speak later today at something. So that's as an aside. But kicha, kicha, mistei Ephraim. I understand over there why it's necessary to tell us the purchase price. The purchase price of Yosef? Like, what would have been an appropriate thing? Like, is the Chumash trying to tell us for 20 silver coins they sold Yosef, and if it would have been 100 silver coins or 1,000 silver coins, would we then say, oh, okay, then I get it. You know, like if one of our children were to say, would you ever sell me? And they say, well, what are they offering? You know, like, you wouldn't say, what are they offering? What are you talking about? There's no value. There's no price. For Yosef, what kind of, what is Chumash even telling us? So the Medrash highlights what the Pesukim say in Amos. The Pesukim tell us that, oddly, the Pesukim tell us about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu could forgive several things, but there's one thing he can't forgive, and that is when we sold a tzaddik for a few pairs of shoes. And the Medrash says, yeah, because if it was 20 kesef, each one took two, each of the 10 brothers got two, and that was enough to buy pairs of shoes. And that's what they did. They bought shoes. So essentially, they sold Yosef for pairs of shoes. And that's why the Kesar decides, when he's going to make the accusation, he's going to fill the whole place with shoes. What's with the shoes? Why did the brother sell Yosef for shoes? Why is he filling up the place with shoes? Why is that the point of the story that he decides to highlight when he makes this accusation, that it's all about the shoes? Furthermore, it doesn't really seem to be correct lahalacha. Meaning, he says to them, the way the Medrash records the story, I want you to tell me the din. Don't tell me anything other than the din. Don't try to talk around the situation, as sometimes, you know, rabbis are skilled at doing that. Don't, just tell me the din. The real din is, lo yamusu avos al banim, ubanim lo yamusu alav al sam. The real din is, children don't pay the price for sins of their forefathers. The real din is they are not chayiv misa. Maybe the brothers were, but they certainly are not. Even Roman law only punishes somebody for their own crimes. So, bein bedinei Yisrael, bein bedinei umos ha'olam, it doesn't make sense that they should be killed. Furthermore, the story includes HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying at some point, Imesh Makol, if I hear another sound, Efoch Esa'olam Kulo Liyamin, I'm going to turn the whole world into an ocean again. The way we read it in the Yom Kippur Machzor, that Hashem threatens to bring a mabul to flood the entire world. One thing, HaKadosh Baruch Hu already made a promise that he's never going to do that. It's directly against the promise that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made. Furthermore, and this is probably the most fundamental problem, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel died around the year 70 CE. Rabbi Akiva was martyred following the failure of the Bar Kokhba revolt in 135 CE. And we're also unsure as to the identity, and certain scholars question the existence of Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol. And it's also strange that the killing of Ten Chachamim all at once didn't warrant mention in the Gemara. Nowhere in Shas does it tell us about the Asara Ruge Malchus all being killed together at the same time. From a historical perspective, it does not seem that this is a historical story. In fact, it's fascinating. In the Tshuvos B'nei Banim, Rabbi Henkin reports that his grandfather, Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, I always feel like Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin doesn't get the attention he deserves. Because whenever anyone quotes Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, they always say, the Gadol Hador in America before Rav Moshe. Like his only definition is that he preceded Rav Moshe. He was also a Gadol Hador. He was also from the Gedolei Apostolim. Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin apparently wouldn't say Eile Ezkara because he thought of its historical inaccuracy. He shouldn't say it, which is shocking. How do you skip it? I remember last year when we were trying to figure out how to pare down the davening. what you can cut out in order to make a shorter tefillah with social distancing and masks and not having people in the same place for too long. So we were talking to Morena of Shechter Shlita, and like some of the things he was willing to cut out, we were like, no, we cannot take out an Nisana Tokef. He's like, why not? It's just a piyut. We're like, no, we cannot take out an Nisana Tokef from the davening. You know, Asara Rugi Malchus, okay, that's not, it's not the Avoda. You can take out Asara Rugi Malchus. But these are things that talk to us. These are things that are, that talk deep in our neshama. It's hard to imagine someone taking out. There's a Sefer Shel Shelus HaKabbalah that says that the story is totally inaccurate. In fact, the Chida in Shema Gedolim writes that he saw what it says in Shalshel HaKabbalah. He has an interesting comment. He says, "Ube'emes ein la'abir azman la'hasig alav." I'm not going to waste my time criticizing it. He says that the author of the Sefer hears things that he hears from whoever he hears them, from people that tell him things. V'kosiv kol asher shama u'matza kasav. Whatever he hears and whatever he finds, he writes down. And he says that's not the way we do proper research, and therefore I don't have to even discuss it. He says b'yosu t'miani alagon bal seder ador shayu muflug b'chama ma'od eich nimshach achrei shal shalos hakabala v'hetik dvar. He says I wonder why others, why great Chachamim quote what he says. But bottom line is, you can argue whether the Sefer Shel Shelus HaKabbalah is reliable or not, but the story does not seem to be an accurate historical story. So obviously the story is here for a lesson or for many lessons. So what exactly are those lessons? So I think we can suggest two things. First of all, a mahalich to answer these questions, and second of all, a little bit of a deeper understanding of what it means when we say that Misas Tzadikim is Mechaper. First, the Mahalich to approach the story. As we mentioned, the Medrash, based on the Pasuk in Amos, tells us that the brothers bought shoes with the proceeds of the sale of Yosef. There's a beautiful Sefer on Chumash called Be'er Yosef. Be'er Yosef was Rav Yosef Zundel Salant. Rav Yosef Salant was a Talmud Chacham who lived in Yerushalayim through the 20th century. He was born in 1885, died in 1981. He had a Richas Yamim. And he's viewed as like this powerhouse of Drush, because his drushos, as they're recorded in his Sefer, are just overwhelmingly brilliant, touching. They touch a nerve. And they're so well thought out and well presented. He comes from the family of the original Rav Yosef Zundel of Salant, who was credited by Rav Yisrael Salanter for inspiring his own devotion to Musar. He learned in the Eitz Chaim Yeshiva, and he lived modestly his whole life. He never really looked for the limelight, but he used to give drashas on Chumash. And they say, I heard this from my chavrusa Rabbi Rasner, I don't know where he got it from, but they say that Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach used to attend the Be'er Yosef's drashas, Rav Yosef Salant's drashas. And he told him after the drushes, you really need to write these down. Like, this needs to be recorded. People need to see this. He said, really? I didn't think I'm... A rabbi says usually you don't have to tell a rabbi twice. You should really write your drushes down. You're right. The world needs to hear my drushes. But he said, really? I don't know. Rav Shlomo Zalman convinced him to write it down. And we have a Sefer, Be'er Yosef, because Rav Shlomo Zalman encouraged him to write it down. So then Be'er Yosef, on Parsha Shemos, he develops the idea of what a shoe represents, what shoes represent. It's a fascinating thing, because shoes are like an afterthought for us. When you put on shoes in the morning, because that's what you do, just like you put on a shirt and pants and everything else that you get dressed, you put on shoes. But in Torah, it seems that shoes have like this outsized importance, right? What do we do in the Birchas HaShachar every single morning? We make a bracha that's so specific to exactly what we're doing. Zokef Kufufim, and every detail, Pokeach Ivrim, we open our eyes and it's Pokeach Ivrim, the Gemara goes through. As you're going through your morning ritual, everything is exactly precise, exactly what you do. And we say, Sha'asli kol tzarchi. What's Sha'asli kol tzarchi? When you put on your shoes. Shoes are kol tzarchi. It's everything I need. Shoes have this like incredible importance. The shoes come up in Chumash, the first encounter Moshe Rabbeinu has with the Shechina. Moshe Rabbeinu comes to the burning bush, and Kodesh Baruch Hu says, shol na'alecha b'al raglecha. Al tikrav alom. Right? You can't come close like that. Right? You're standing on Admas Kodesh. You have to take your shoes off before you come close. Again by Yoshua also. You can't wear shoes when you're coming close to the Ribbono Shel Olam. What is it with the shoes? Why the emphasis on the shoes? There's an interesting comment Mariel Diskin has that there's a Medrash plea almost. The Medrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu on the pasuk Shal Nalech Me'al Raglecha, Al Tikrav Halom, don't come close. Shal Nalech Me'al Raglecha, take off your shoes. Medrash says Malchus Bikesh, that Moshe Rabbeinu was looking for Malchus. So Rav Yeshua Leib Diskin in his commentary on Chumash says, well, where do you see that he was looking for Malchus? He has an unbelievable insight. He says, there's a Gemara in Chulin. And this is one of those details in Gemara where you could learn the Gemara. It could have been like today's daf. And I still would not remember because it seemed like one of those insignificant lines that, you know, you just get through because you read through the line. Because not everything in the daf is significant. There are the important lines and then there are just the things that are mentioned, right? But the great Talmid Chacham has such attention to detail. He says, there's Gemara Maseches Chulin that tells us that one of the Amoraim commented that he was only able to remove his shoes while still standing up when he was 80 years old because he was treated as a child with special oils and ointments that enabled him to have a certain dexterity and strength. I don't know, he did yoga or something. So when he was 80 years old, he was able to remove his shoes standing up. But normal people are not able to remove their shoes standing up when they're 80 years old. When you're 80 years old, you have to sit down to remove your shoes. Just yesterday in my shul, we had a bar mitzvah. It was the most beautiful sight. The grandfather of the bar mitzvah boy got an aliyah. And then someone else got an aliyah. And then the grandfather was walking away. And the father of the bar mitzvah boy got the next aliyah. And the father noticed that the grandfather's shoe was untied. And he immediately, after he was called up to his aliyah, he immediately bent down on the ground and tied his father's shoe. And then quickly ran outside to wash his hands and come back in, all in the time that the gabbai had to say the Mishaberech. I don't even know if the gabbai noticed. He probably did. It looked like he went a little slower on the Mishaberech. What a beautiful sight. That was the reaction. But an 80-year-old, says the Gemara, is not able to remove their shoes standing up. They need to sit down to do so. So says the Gemara, the Medrash rather, Malchus Bikesh. Because the halacha is that when you're in the presence of the Shekhinah, Ein yeshiva ba'azara el malchus beis David b'lvad. The only person that's allowed to sit in the azara is the malchus beis David. Why did Yeravim ben Nevat develop a whole separate place of avoda? Because he knew that everyone was going to see Rechavim sitting in the azara, and he's standing. He's not able to sit in the azara, and it's going to look bad. So he comes up with the idea of a golden calf, not the most original idea, but a pretty terrible one. And it, just so that they don't go to the same place. They're not both by the azara. Ein yeshiva ba'azara el malchus beis David b'lvad. Moshe Rabbeinu was going to take his shoes off right on the spot. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, now back up. You can't take off your shoes here. Why? You're 80 years old. If you're going to take off your shoes here, it means you're going to sit. Says the Medrash, Malchus Bikesh. That Moshe Rabbeinu was looking for Malchus because he was planning on taking off his shoes right then and there on the spot. And to do that, he would have had to sit down. But anyway, what is it with all of these shoes? What's the story with the shoes? And Rav Yosef Salant suggests the following in the Bar Yosef. He says, when we think we're in control of something, when we think we're running the world, when we think that we're in control of a situation, we tend to lose respect for others. The more we realize that the Ribbono Shel Olam is in charge, the more caring we'll be to his children. Because the more we realize that our job is not to take control, our job is to do what the one who is in control expects us to do. Shoes represent our submission to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's the story of Asara Ruge Malchus, a total submission to the Ribbono Shel Olam. How do they represent submission to the Ribbono Shel Olam? There are four levels of Bria, of creation. There's a domain. The Kuzari highlights this because of the fifth level of creation of Yisrael. But there's a domain. There's that which was totally inanimate. Then there's a Tzomeach. There's that which sprouts. Then there's a Bal Chai. There's a living beyond plant life, animals that live and breathe. And then there's a medaber, there's a human being. So shoes represent that we're using the Baal Chai and we're developing a mastery over the Baal Chai by using that, by using leather to be able to go from place to place. The removal of shoes represents our total submission to the Ribbono Shel Olam, that we're not a master of anything. And that's why there's an emphasis on turning the world back to nothingness. What does it mean, turning the world back to nothingness? Hashem says, if I hear another sound, I'm going to turn the world back to nothingness. I'm going to flood out the whole world. What he means to say is that we can't understand the calculus of the Ribbono Shel Olam. We can't understand exactly why things are put where they are, why HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes things happen the way he makes them happen. And in order to do that, we would have to see everything. You know, the Gaonim have an expression, Ilu Yedativ Hayisiv, if I would know Hashem, I would be Hashem, because we can't understand everything. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not saying that he's physically going to flood the entire world. He's saying that if you want to understand why it is that I do things, then I would have to pull apart the whole world piece by piece and show you how I used every bit of fabric in the famous mashal of the Medrash, show you how, like the tailor shows how he used every bit of fabric. Now, if this past year and a half has taught us anything, it's that we are absolutely not in control. You know, it's so amazing. People forget that, like, right before COVID, scientists were celebrating that they found the God particle, which some claimed makes a God who designed the world redundant. And then Hashem decided to send something microscopic that would make the Yitush of Titus look like the Empire State Building. And it makes the world of science look like a bunch of primitive fools. The Asara Haruge Malchus were Nitfas Ba'avon Hador. They were punished as a result of Sinas Chinam, which has its ancient roots in Mechiras Yosef. They weren't punished for the sins of an earlier generation. They were punished for never correcting the sins of the earlier generation. It's not a historical account. It's the story of all of Jewish history. Tzaddikim who pay the price for our failures to love each other and to care for each other properly. Because we have our own sense of mastery, our own sense of gaiva that drives us. And with this we could understand the emphasis on the shoes. You people think you're masters? You people think you're in control? You're not in control of anything. Do we punish the sins of the fathers? No, but it's the children that grab on to the sins of the fathers and continue along that path. I spoke last night in my shul about the need to daven for ruchnius. You know, so often when we daven, we daven for very important things. For refuos and for yeshuos and for parnasa, very, very important things. But we also need to daven for ruchnius. We also need to daven for spirituality. We also need to daven for success in connecting to Hashem, in speaking to mechanchim and to rabbanim, particularly those in high schools and yeshivos in Eretz Yisrael. They're telling me that there is a crisis of ruchnius right now. You know, throughout the pandemic, we keep on saying that Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Kol HaTorah Kula, and it is, absolutely, without any doubt, except for Avodah Zarah Gilui Reish V'Yichus Damim, it's Docha Kol HaTorah Kula. But that doesn't mean that there's no price. It still has an impact. When you're Docha Kol HaTorah Kula, the loss of Kol HaTorah Kula has an impact. And it's having an outsized impact, an oversized impact on our children. And we need to daven for that. We need to daven for success in Ruchnius. A friend of mine told me, he once, when he was a little boy, he met Rav Avigdor Miller, Zichrono Levracha, and he tried to think of a question really quickly, and he asked something along the lines of, why is it that we daven for success in learning? Don't you just learn to be successful in learning? What do you daven for it for? It's a pretty good question for a little kid, or for an adult for that matter. And Rav Victor Miller said to him, if you want it, you daven for it. It's a good rule in life. Anything that you want, you got to daven for. You can't just expect things to happen. We always daven. We daven for everything that we want in life. And we need to daven for a sense of ruchnius. And part of that sense of ruchnius is that's been lost over, or has been hurt, I shouldn't say lost, but has been hurt over the past year and a half, is a sense of achdus. Because to the extent that we're less connected with other Jews, to the extent that we feel alienated from other Jews, that hurts our ruchnius. That hurts our ability to connect properly. And what's the kapara that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose? HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose Misas Tzadikim is Mechaper. The Gemara might cut in Tav Chavches. Amar Rabbi Yami, Lama Nisvacha Misas Miriam Leparshas Parah Aduma, Lomar Lecha Ma Parah Aduma Mechaperes Af Misasim Shal Tzadikim Mechaperes. Just like the paraduma is a kapara, so too the misas tzaddikim is a kapara. Amar Rabbi Lazar, lama nismucha misas Aaron l'bigdei kuna? Why is misas Aaron juxtaposed with bigdei kuna? Ma bigdei kuna mechaper naf misasin shel tzaddikim mechaperes. Like bigdei kuna are mechaper, the misa of tzaddikim is mechaper. So, in what way is it mechaper? It's mechaper because hachay yiten alibo, the Meiri explains on the spot. Because when tzaddikim are lost, we start to, it's a cause for introspection. It's a motivation for tefillah. And ultimately, the tefillah is the mechaper. But it's so interesting, of all of the karbanos that the Gemara could highlight, you know, just like this is mechaper, so too, what karban is a mechaper? What karban gives kapara to Klal Yisrael? I don't know, I would have said seir la'Hashem, or karban chatas, karban Hashem. Ma para mechaperes? Para, what's para? Para aduma? That's not really what para aduma is for. What's para aduma for? It's meant to be metahir, people who are tamei mason. It's not really a mechaper. So the achronim trying to figure out what exactly are Chazal trying to highlight when they highlight dafka para aduma. So Meshchachma writes that's exactly the point. Para aduma is not only mechaper; it brings tahara. You know. That the Gemara tells us after the death of Rabbi Zeira, there were certain bar yone, there were these, I don't know if there's a good translation, hooligans, these thugs who used to rely on the zuchus of Rabbi Zeira. And after Rabbi Zeira died, they realized that nobody's there to daven for them. And that caused them to do tshuva. It brought about a sense of tahara. And misas tzaddikim, because it usually takes more than one to get us to look inward. So it's not only mechaper, it's metahir. It causes us to be metahir ourselves. Furthermore, the Torah Tmima writes that the para represents the mother, the tikkun for the egel. The egel is the baby and the para is the mother. Tosos Maseches Moed Katan points this out. When a mother dies, the children are broken and they show kavod. It's not the death that's mechaper, but it's the avelus and feeling unsettled and feeling insecure. That's ultimately mechaper. Furthermore, the Iyun Yaakov writes that while most karbanos tzibor are only for zecharim, only male animals, the para aduma is in a keva. And it teaches us that misas nashim tzidkanios is also mechaper. The idea that the para aduma is mechaper for us is similar to the way that misas tzaddikim is mechaper. Misas tzaddikim is mechaper because of the introspection that it causes us to have, the feeling that we have that we need to do tshuva, that we need to think about how we're living our lives and why it is that the Ribbono Shel Olam decided that there should be certain karbanos. Furthermore, the Ya'aros Tavash of Yonos Naibshitz writes, the para is metamei asataorim, and misas tzaddikim causes immense spiritual loss to the Talmidim and to people close to them. Those who never listened to tzaddikim during their lifetime, the Ksav Sofer says, get kapara from their deaths. But those who listen to them and learn from them, they'll never have the opportunity again. And for them, the hezek is yoser min atoeles, because they take a step back in Yiras Hashem. So it turns out ironic, misa tzaddikim is mechaper, but mechaper for whom? Mechaper for the people who didn't take advantage of the tzaddikim in their lifetimes. And now they're finally learning the lessons of those tzaddikim. And when you look at the stories of each of the Asara Harugei Malchus, there are so many lessons to be derived from each one. Let me just highlight maybe two or three. Rabbi Shimon begged to be taken before Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol, so he wouldn't have to witness the death of Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol. When Rabbi Shimon was beheaded, Rabbi Shmuel took his head and said, "Ei lashon amemeheres lahoros bimrei shefer, ba'avonos eichat alochechas esa'afar." How could it be that the head that spoke, that this brain and this mouth that produced such beautiful Torah is now licking the dirt? The Gemara in Masech Sanhedrin Dafir Aleph tells us that Shmuel HaKatan predicted before he died that Shimon v'Yishmael yehargu b'cherev v'chavroi l'ktala v'sharam l'biza. He predicted some of the Asara Rugei Malchus, but it's just an amazing moment where Rabbi Shimon begged to be taken before Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol. Why did he beg to be taken before Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol? Because he couldn't bear to see the loss of Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol. It hurt more to see someone else suffer than to suffer ourselves. Any parent knows this. If you see a child in pain, it hurts you more than it hurts the child. That's the kind of love the Jewish people are expected to have for each other. You know, Rav Noach Weinberg, Zichrono Livracha, when he was suffering in his final illness, was suffering excruciating pain. And at some point, you know, they saw it on his face that he was just worn, that he was suffering from terrible pain. And they said to him, "What hurts?" And his response, "Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael hurts." That a person suffers Klal Yisrael suffering. We always instruct the Bali Tefillah in our shul. I took this cue from Rabbi Neuberger, Shlita, to always look around the room before you get up to lead the tzibur. See the pain of Klal Yisrael around you. Think about the tefillos that everybody else has. Think about what's welling up in the hearts of other people as you're about to be a shliach for the whole tzibur. But it's not only hadracha for a shliach tzibur, it's hadracha for all of us. There's something about being part of a tzibur. You know, a rabbi always sits, you know, usually sits facing the crowd. So you get to see everybody as they're davening. And sometimes, like, I'll know about certain things that are going on, and I'll know what that person has going on in his life, and what that person has going on in his life, and you see the impact on the tefillah, you see the way they're davening, and it motivates you to daven more. That's what we should all do. And in addition to that, we should all realize that the Ribbono Shel Olam sets it up very often, that whatever other people are davening for, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put them in close proximity to us. Because very often we are the answer to other people's tefillos. The guy next to me may be davening because he lost his job and he needs a parnasa, and maybe I have that connection. Maybe I know the person that could get him that job. The person on the other side is davening for a shidduch for his daughter. Maybe I know somebody. It's so amazing how Klal Yisrael works. Ribbono Shel Olam put us all together. That's what the Gemara tells us. We just did in Daf Yomi. The Gemara tells us that the way they would sit, the Gemara says that the way they would sit in the Beis Knesset of Alexandria Shal Mitzrayim was that they sat by profession. It was, shul was a place to network. Everyone sat by profession. And if you were looking for work in a particular profession, you would talk to all the people that were working in your profession. Not during davening, after davening. Right? And they would be able to figure it out for you. That's what it was. It's kedai to take a look around when we daven. The message of the Asar Arugei Malchus is that if we could have a little bit of that sense of Rabbi Shimon, that I would rather be taken before him so that I don't have to see his downfall. That's something that could be an unbelievable zechus on the Yom Noraim. Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion, just to highlight one more, he risked his life and he ultimately gave his life to teach Torah Barabim. And there's something that happens at the end of that story. The executioner of Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion realizes what he's doing. And he asks, if I were to hasten your death, will I go to Olam Haba? And he's told yes. And he himself jumps in the fire afterwards after hastening Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion's death. And from the executioner, we see the power of a hirur tshuva, of being kona olama b'sha'a achas, of being able to take a moment of time and have this incredible shift. You know, so many members of Klal Yisrael are able to do that, are able to rise to the occasion, to be kona olama b'sha'a achas, to have that one decision where we're able to say, you know what, whatever I've done until now, right now I'm making a decision that's impactful for who I am right now. This is, I'm going to be an Eved Hashem. You know, there's a story, I read in a newspaper a while ago, or online, no such thing as newspapers anymore, but there was a story of this fellow, you can look it up, his name is Jeff Schwartz. He was an offensive lineman. Offensive linemen are big boys usually. And he typically ate turkey sausage and cheese for breakfast. His name is Jeff Schwartz. And the story was about how he was going to fast on Yom Kippur. The guy eats turkey sausage and cheese for breakfast. And he was going to fast on Yom Kippur. And they asked him, like, why are you fasting on Yom Kippur? He said, it's not the most fun 27 hours, but it's worth it. 27 hours. He kept rubbing the tom. Yom Kippur. But it's worth it. Sometimes a Jew has something that comes out that says, you know what, whatever I normally do, but right now is that moment. Right now I can be kol olam b'sha'a achas. Rabbi Chanan ben Tradion was punished for a relatively minor sin of being hoges Hashem b'os Yosef, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu's medaktekim metzadikim kochot ha'sa'ara, and the contrast between he and his executioner, he was being killed for this minor misstep, and the executioner is going to Olam Haba for this one moment of greatness. It really shows us the vastness of the opportunities that we have in front of us to become great, of the opportunities that we have in front of us to do tshuva, to achieve kapara. So again, we're going to read Asara Rugei Malchus as a slicha, not as a kina, because a slicha is not about lamenting and it's not about avelus. A slicha is about kapara. A slicha is about tshuva. And the story of the Asara Rugei Malchus, the historical accuracy is irrelevant. That's not what the story is about. The story is about what it means to us. And the emphasis seems to come back to a sense of love for other Jews. The brothers failed in that mission. And that's represented by the shoes, because we get too prideful and therefore we stop to look at other people because we feel that we have our own successes. Why do we need to look at others? And now, in those moments, on Yom Kippur, we remind ourselves that we always need to look at the Ribbono Shel'olam's children. Do we punish for the sin of the fathers? No, but if we carry on those sins of the fathers, then we continue to pay the price for them. And we remind ourselves on Yom HaKippurim and throughout the Yom Noraim to daven for ourselves, of course, but we have to daven on three levels. We daven for ourselves and our families, we daven for our communities, and we daven for Klal Yisrael. And we have to daven not only for the physical well-being of Klal Yisrael, which is always a point of emphasis, but for the spiritual well-being of Klal Yisrael. Because if you want it, you daven for it. And the success of others is completely tied in to my own success. The ability of others to be Oved Hashem properly, b'simcha, as we read about in yesterday's parsha, is completely connected to my own ability to be Oved Hashem b'simcha. So if I could just offer that one little etzah, that maybe right before we daven Shemona Esrei, on Yom HaKippurim, on Rosh Hashanah, just to pause, take a look around the room. I'm reminded of Father, one of my friends in shul told me that he was sitting next to his young son on Rosh Hashanah, and they were toward the front of the shul, and his son turned around, and like his immediate instinct was, pay attention, look at the sitter. And then he stopped himself, and he said, and he looked around, and he saw the intensity of the tefillos that everybody else was offering. He said, is there a better sight that I want my son to see than that? To see a room full of people that are davening with an intensity, that are reaching out to the Ribbono Shel Olam, regular people. It's kedai. Take a look around. We shouldn't be wandering around, looking around the whole time. Take a look around. Think of all of the collective tefillos that people are offering and offer a tefillah on their behalf for the people who are lonely, for the people who are ill, for the people who are looking for the Ribbono Shel Olam and unable to find him, and particularly for the young people who are looking for the Ribbono Shel Olam and looking for their way in life and are somewhat confused in our generation, and particularly over these past couple of years where it's so much harder for them to find it, because we're going to find that when our tefillos aren't just our tefillos, when our tefillos are Klal Yisrael's tefillos, when our tefillos are the tefillos of the Asara Rugei Malchus, when our tefillos carry that message that we have the weight of Klal Yisrael on our shoulders, such a tefillah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is always going to be mekabel. The Chiddush HaRim writes, and with this I promise I'll really close, the Chiddush HaRim writes that HaKol Bidei Shemayim Chutz Mi'er HaShemayim might mean, I heard from Rav Yisrael Reisman, HaKol Bidei Shemayim Chutz Mi'er HaShemayim might mean that HaKol, everything else that you daven for, that's Bidei Shemayim. It's up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu if he's going to give it to you or not. He may yes, he may not. If you can ask for Parnasa, you may get it, you may not. You can ask for Refuah, you may get it, you may not. Chutz Mi'er HaShemayim, when you daven for Yir HaShemayim, when you daven for Ruchnias, Hashem's heart is wide open. So we should all daven for that ruchnius, and we should all be zoche to taking advantage of Hashem's heart being wide open. We should all be zoche to ksiva v'chasima tova in good health.